We have quite a few folks here. I'd like to welcome you. The response was overwhelming. We had to close it off at 35 people. We're going to first introduce Barbara Grantwork, who is the Assistant Commissioner from the Division of Student Services. And basically, we have a pretty impressive list of people from the Department of Education. Barbara is the Assistant Commissioner, Division of Student Service. Within the division are the Office of Student Achievement and Accountability, so they're responsible for Title I. So that's Suzanne, that's you, right?
Yes, and Suzanne.
Okay, and the Office of Special Education Programs, responsible for IDEA, and then the Office of Educational Support Services, which is you, Susan Martz, correct, for 21st Century. So, Barbara, do you want to take the lead and see if you could, in a nutshell, kind of move us forward?
I'll try my best.
Thank you.
What I thought I would do is just have a little bit of an overview of the three pots of money that we're currently dealing with that everybody is hearing about, so we could talk about that and how districts are really required to use these funds, and then talk about where there may be opportunities for collaboration and working together, and where there are maybe opportunities for the providers to apply themselves on behalf of districts. But I thought there were three main pots of money that we need to talk about, and that's the stabilization funds. Those are the stabilization funds, the Title I funds, and the IDEA ARRA. Those are the recovery funds, the stimulus funds. Now, there's been some confusion about all of these, and that's why I wanted to take the three pots and just make sure we're all clear on them. The first is the stabilization funds. Now, those funds are essentially the governor's funds. And the governor is given those funds, and they're provided to stabilize state and local budgets, to avoid reductions in, you know, education and other essential public services. And the governor has flexibility in how those funds are used. In New Jersey, the governor determined to use a large pot, $1.3 billion, in education. And the money was used specifically to fund and support the New Jersey funding formula. And, it, you know, in my opinion, we're pretty lucky in New Jersey for that, because in many states there are huge budget shortfalls in education and budget reductions and severe reductions in the money going to schools. So what was decided in New Jersey is those stabilization funds would go directly into the formula. So districts are receiving those funds, and I won't go into the details on how they divide it up and how they get it, but the important point is that those funds are not new funds. Those are funds that are essentially replacing state aid funds that a district would have gotten. So the district, it doesn't change their budget. It doesn't give them new funds to do anything. It really allows them to maintain their budget. So that's the stabilization funds, and where people hear about, you know, in other states they're doing this with the stabilization, that, and are applying, that's not what's happening here with the stabilization. They've gone into the formula, and because of that, we've been able to fund the formula at the current level, even with some increase, to ensure that the children in New Jersey are getting what they need. So that's one big pot of money. And the next pot that I'm just going to go over these broadly is the Title I money. Now, again, we have about $173 million in ARRA Title I. Those are funds that we received in addition to the funds that we get every year for Title I. And those monies are earmarked to Title I, to meeting the intent and purposes of Title I. The other act and funding is the IDEA, the special education funding. Those monies, again, are in addition to what we get in regular IDEA, and that's $360 million. Those funds, basically, it's another year of funding. I mean, we doubled the amount in IDEA. So, again, those three pots, state stabilization does not provide new money. Title I and IDEA do provide new money to districts for them to do all of the things that they think would make a difference in the education. Now, I want to not take too much time on that. Just talk a little bit about the different purposes and the way we're talking about these funds, where it's important for districts when they decide. Now, remember, in these two pots of money, Title I and IDEA, it is the district that determines how they're going to spend the money, what their needs are, who they will contract with. No one else can apply for these funds. The state provides these funds directly to the districts, and then the district decides what they need. So when we look at all of them, we're telling the districts to meet the goals, there are general goals of the Recovery Act, and we're saying you need to look at these funds to say, how are you going to use these funds to improve the results for your students? Because we want to increase the capacity to have a long-term result, not just as best as you can to use these funds so that once these funds are gone, because these are one-time only funds, I mean, we hope maybe they won't be one-time only and everybody will see this as a great idea, but if it is only one-time only, we'd like to have the most positive long-term result. We want to make sure districts are taking this opportunity to look at all of the plans they have in their schools, the things that they need to do, their problem areas, why are kids not performing well, and put the money into areas that will make a difference. They're also really looking at how can I sustain it. I don't want to develop a program that now I have a recurring cost and I can't do anything in 2 years and I have that. Also, the other thing is that districts must track these funds separately. There's a very heightened accountability requirement for the ARRA funds. So it's important for districts to plan to spend this in a way that they will be able to track very carefully how they're using it. And, you know, we're looking at also the ability to measure outcomes. So I'm not going to go into, unless people want me to later, the suggestions that we're making for IDEA, but we have plenty of suggestions on how they can use these funds to improve the outcomes for kids, students. Now, in Title I, now remember, IDEA is focused on students with disabilities. So those funds can only be used to provide programs, related services, everything that's needed basically for students with disabilities. So it's clear that the population that is being served is a unique population in IDEA. Now Title I, trying to move through this quickly, the Title I funds are provided to districts and the funds are provided based on a poverty rate. Districts have to meet a certain poverty rate, but the students are determined eligible based on performance. So the focus of Title I is on serving low-performing students in poverty schools to try to address the effects of poverty on educational performance. So in Title I, they have lots of opportunities and different ways to spend the money. And again, it's tied to their needs, to program assessments, to the status of the different schools, and they have a planning process in place. This money allows them to really take a broad look and say, what can I do now that I couldn't do before? And there are lots of examples that we give them in Title I on how they can use these funds in a way that would serve the students. This is an opportunity for them to serve more students or serve more schools than they are serving now, to expand their preschool programs, to align them, a lot about training teachers, and a lot about establishing intensive, additional, after-school, additional learning opportunities before school, during school, after school, in the summer. That's a key component of this because Title I is designed to give some children more so that they can reduce the achievement gap, so that they can improve their performance. And the whole idea, certainly, of after-school programs is key to, and we believe a very important part of improving the services for students. And there are lots of different service delivery models that Title I schools have. Basically, they can be a targeted program where they're designed to, if you have a school that is a targeted school, then their Title I services are for particular students. Students that have been determined eligible by virtue of low performance. There's another kind of school we call a school program, a school-wide program, where by the nature of the poverty rate that's high in the whole school, they're providing services to upgrade the entire school. But in general, those are the kinds of services that they can and that we're talking about using these funds for. There are other funds available also, and I think the one that is coming that will have most relevance, not just relevance, but you'll be able to access in a different way, is the innovation funds, where those funds will be available to other providers to apply directly in cooperation and on behalf of local districts, and it could be in a consortium, one LEA, but the idea is that is the one area, I believe, where providers will have an opportunity to directly apply on behalf and with LEAs, districts, for these funds. I know I've been talking very fast, but maybe we should just stop here to talk about, see if there are questions on the pots of money. Is that okay?
That's fine. So what I ask people to
do... money. I know Sue is going to talk more about examples and opportunities for collaboration, but I just wanted to make sure everybody understood these different pots of money that are out there right now.
Does anyone have a question concerning the different pots of money? Okay. So we can move forward then. Excellent.
Okay, Sue is going to take over now.
Yeah, I just wanted to take an opportunity because we've had lots of discussions at our after-school networking meetings as well as with the 21st Century Community Learning Center programs, and even I had an opportunity to talk with Boys and Girls Club. So we thought that it might be important to just talk a little bit about what providers can do in order to establish a relationship with the school districts. Many of our programs already have a positive relationship with the school. And if you do, you're way ahead of the curve. This is a great opportunity for you to be consulting with the principal, to talk to them about what your program has to offer, and to actually be written into the application if that's what the district decides that they want to do. Other programs, however, have not established those kinds of relationships. And I think it's a really important thing for people to do in order for them to really see the connection between the school day activities and intentionally planning for what will happen in the after-school programs. And there are lots of ways to do this, but the most important way is to actually touch base with and establish a partnership with the principal in the school for, you know, of the kids that you're serving. Many of our after-school providers are also participating on local planning groups. That's a great way for people to hear about what you're doing. And for you to not only establish a relationship with the schools, but also with some of the other entities out there that will also be getting some of the stimulus money. You know, we talk a lot about programs that are sharing buildings. If you can maintain a continuous positive relationship, you're sharing a building, it's really important. So at times like this, when money becomes available, it will be much easier for you to plan with them. A couple ideas that we've talked about in regard to not only establishing this relationship, but also sharing with the school district the benefits of the programs that you have. If you're not going to sell your program to them, they're not going to see the benefits that you have to offer. So it's really important that you begin to talk with them about any of the positive outcomes that you've seen regarding student achievement, the benefits in the research regarded additional learning time, the opportunity to reduce summer learning loss. Lots of things are going on regarding tutoring and homework help, and these are the kinds of activities that can directly be funded using Title I funds. Another area that people really might want to think about is the area of students with disabilities. We know across the state that in after-school programs, there really is a deficit in regard to being able to serve students with disabilities. So if your program is interested in that, it's really important that you begin to look at how you can go about incorporating those kids into the program. Because as Barbara said, for all of these, if you're going to access any of the IDEA funds or any of the Title I funds through planning with your district, you're going to have to be able to show them that you're going to provide something in addition to what's been done before. So there's lots out there, and I know, Diane, through your listserv and your website, you're sharing with people a lot about what the research shows in regard to the benefits of after-school programs. But it's important that the providers take this research and apply it to their own programs to be able to show them locally how their programs have established created a positive learning environment for the kids. Another thing that's really important when you're trying to establish a positive relationship is to give something back. And we've heard some great examples from programs that are operating in school districts, in schools or near schools, where the program, the after-school program, actually has purchased something that has benefited the school day program, and then they get something back in return. And a perfect example of that is something like playground equipment. We know that there are after-school programs that have purchased the playground equipment that the school day children can also use, and in return, they're getting other kinds of supports from the school. So that's just one example of giving something back in return. Another thing that has been very beneficial are the after-school programs providing an opportunity for family nights. And I know that student engagement is a very important component of Title I. So if the after-school programs can demonstrate to the school day program that they actually are providing a perfect opportunity to bring families into the school and establish a better mechanism for parent and family engagement, that would be a great asset to the school. And finally, I just wanted to mention the importance of showing past results. Wherever you can, if you can show, you know, that you've improved attendance rates or that the students are engaged in completing community projects, if you can show results to the school, it's going to be easier for them to help to support your program. Because all of the ARRA funds, and for that matter, all of the Title I and IDEA funds, really have to be able to show outcomes. So unless you can establish that and really, you know, sell it to the school that you have something to offer that will make it easy for them to demonstrate and show that their investment has produced a positive outcome for student learning, that's going to put you way ahead of anyone else. So I think those are just some ideas that will help to address some of the things that Barbara was talking about regarding the accountability and measurable outcomes, as well as things like remembering that these have to supplement the existing programs and provide something in addition to those programs. Questions?
Yes, this is Chris Owens from Bell, Building Educated Leaders for Life. I wanted to just get clarity on this issue of giving something back to schools, because my concern is that if I interpret that correctly, you're essentially encouraging providers to de facto bribe schools into participating with them by saying, we'll give you this if you give us that. Am I hearing that correctly?
Well, I wouldn't exactly call it bribery. I'm calling it a partnership. Many times the programs are working together, and because one program purchases something that will benefit their program, they're happy to share it. And the same thing with the schools. Many times schools are making their buildings available to after-school programs, and they're saying, come on in, you can use our computers, you can use our gym, you can use our gym equipment. And in return, the schools know that the after-school providers are giving something to the kids that's really important for them. So I think it's a partnership, and it's an example of sharing what people are purchasing to really get a better bang for the buck. I mean, if people are working together and everyone is expending their program and someone else's program, we're going to get a lot farther.
This is Barbara, and I just want to make something perfectly clear. Since you asked the question in the way you did,
no one is suggesting bribing anyone.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to sound as harsh as I did, but I'm concerned because we've had lots of experience with for-profit, you know, providers, and I'm not trying to malign anybody, but where folks with, you know, bigger budgets and more resources are essentially able to outgun not-for-profits through exactly those sorts of methods. And so I just wanted to make sure I was understanding the partnership concept in the right way.
Very clear. There was no suggestion of bribery.
Yes, I hear you. Are for-profit providers allowed to participate in this, or is this just CBOs and not-for-profits?
Are for-profits allowed to participate in what?
In any of the partnerships with the LEAs?
It's up to the LEA. We're not talking about the innovation funds now. If you're talking about the three pots.
To the three pots.
The three pots, it's up to the district to determine who they're going to, and they're using vendors that are appropriate to meet their needs.
Okay. Thank you.
Districts can contract with any service providers that they deem to be appropriate. In the innovation funds, it's nonprofits.
Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Sherry Barr from the Princeton Center for Leadership Training. I have a question about the innovation funds. Are they a component of the Title I pot, or are they a separate pot?
That's a separate pot. That's why I was saying the three pots that we're working with now do not have any ability for a provider to apply. These are all district funds. The innovation fund, which is, there's some information out, but there's nothing, the information isn't out yet on an application. But what the feds are saying is that nonprofit organizations working in collaboration with one or more LEA or a consortium of schools can apply directly to the feds for these grants. That's different. That's what I'm saying. These three.
Okay. Yes. So that application, that helps. That application would be directly to the federal government.
Correct. And
right.
Right.
And you can go online right now and see whatever we've seen. I mean, they've posted some information online.
Right.
You can certainly go to the federal website and
see the recovery.
To see the description. It's www.ed.gov.
Great. Thank you.
Barbara, I'm sorry. This is Dennis McNally. Can you just clarify that a little further? I heard part of that. You're saying the innovation funds are separate, they're a fourth group?
That's a separate grant that is not available yet. The application isn't out. That, I'll even read you what the purpose of this grant is, that we're getting straight from, the feds, and it says the program will support efforts to bring to scale educational practices with significant evidence of success in improving student achievement and support the development, implementation, replication and further evaluation of promising innovative practices. The program will not support the simple expansion of well-established and resourced programs. The department will be publishing a notice of proposed priorities, requirements, definitions, and selection criteria in the Federal Register and will be inviting public comment. The department also will make the notice available on www.edgov. So that when they publish their priorities and all of the requirements, that they do that in the Register and the public can comment on it. Then they publish the final document. And what it's saying here, as I said before about nonprofits, doesn't say anything about profits, said nonprofit organizations working in collaboration, and that to be eligible, an LEA must have made progress in raising student achievement significantly, closing the achievement gap, and made progress in other areas. So what they're looking for, at least from the little bit of information we have here, are promising new practices that can have a significant impact on raising achievement.
And there's no aggregate dollar amount that's been label for that?
There is a dollar amount, $650 million available. That's the total nationwide.
This is Melissa from the YMCA of Burlington County. How much did you say was in the IDEA pot?
$360 million.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Are there any other questions? And that's $360 million nationally, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So do we know what
you're
our
about the innovation?
Yeah.
For the innovation is national, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
And the IDEA, that...
State. The $360 million is New Jersey's portion.
That's New Jersey's. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Does anyone else have a question or confusion or...
Too confused to ask a question?
Exactly. Okay, we can go back to questions a little later, too, if that's possible, if people are interested. We also have Dr. Alnardo Webster, who is the superintendent of schools of Roselle, New Jersey, and we asked him to kind of come on board to talk a little bit about the impact of after-school on student achievement that has happened in Roselle and how it he really, how, well, Alnardo, you're the best spokesperson, how it ties into after-school. So, Alnardo?
Yeah. Can you hear me, Diane?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. And I'm just the resource person as a superintendent that would like to share with everybody that there are quite a few superintendents out there that are very pro after-school programs and very pro community-based organizations. participating in our student achievement process. Certainly now is a wonderful time for new CBOs and current CBOs that we work with to enjoy some additional funding so that we can provide more services to our students in our district. Just a couple of points I'd like to make, and you know, because I know, Sue, you did a great job. Everything has basically been covered. But from a superintendent perspective, we're looking mainly to improve test scores and provide opportunities for expanded learning. And in doing that, we ask our partners to tie in and use the same language as we do to help us, you know, provide another opportunities to increase student achievement through whatever initiative, whatever actions that they bring forth through their program. So with the wording, the phraseology is important as to how can you help us with our quest. Each district's instructional profile is different, and I would suggest that, you know, you look at the district's instructional profile and come up with activities that can supplement that. It could be as simple as homework assistance, improving student achievement by providing a homework assistance program that has enrichment activities tied into it. Certainly field trips that encourage, you know, educational enrichment, activities, public speakers, you know, there are all kinds of ways to approach student achievement. But, you know, when we're looking at, you know, how can we collaborate with these additional dollars, you know, it'll get our eyes, it'll get the top administrator's eyes or catch their attention, rather, by using, you know, things that will help instruction and improve student achievement, but at the same time, you're also bringing in the enrichment activities as well. So this is a wonderful time. What we're looking at, and then I'll just open up the floor, these dollars are like one-time dollars. You know, you get a chance to do some creative things, and you don't expect the dollars to be there again next year. So with that in mind, you know, the sustainability issue is always going to be in the back of everyone's mind. If we come up with a new program and we fund it, are the dollars going to be there for next year? What's the potential of sustaining it? So that's always a question as well. But I as the superintendent in the district that, you know, has just recently got off a district need improvement list, and it was directly, you know, through our expanded learning school day program that we did it with, we're very pro, community collaboration and pro after-school programs. So that's just, you know. But, there are some community-based organizations that fill a niche, that have a particular speciality that they can bring to the table that a district doesn't have. And sometimes it's just in facilities, the ability to have a pool, or it's in a special activity. You're bringing a specific activity that you specialize in and bringing parents or families together, or whatever your specialty or niche is. Now's the time to kind of really, come forth with a proposal that would expand that and at the same time, indirectly, always improve student achievement. So, Diane, that's, you know, I just to start the discussion.
Very good. And that actually leads into Amy Sutnick-Plotch, who works with our organization, has kind of come up with kind of like some tips on how after-school organizations can approach their districts for funding. And I was hoping, Elnardo, then too, after Amy kind of goes through this piece, that maybe you and the DOE staff can kind of respond to that too with other ideas or suggestions, then we can still have some Q&A. Okay, Amy?
Great. Thanks, Diane. And one other resource I wanted to mention, just following up on the earlier discussions about finding information, is, before I get started, that the After School Alliance website, which I think is afterschoolalliance.org, has their Economic Recovery Act wiki, which is constantly updated with new information that they get from the federal websites, from national organizations, that gives you the national perspective and sort of creative ideas on connecting after school with the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act. So that's a great resource. And like Diane said, what I have to share really builds on other people's presentations and gets a little more granular with hopefully some advice that'll help people move this process forward.
and which is important because this is something that your school districts are looking at now and during the month of August. It's a tight time frame, and so it is something you need to get on quickly and efficiently. So the first step is really do your homework. Understand what the legislation is, and that's a piece of what we've been trying to share through this call. How are the decisions made at the local level? Next, learn how Title I dollars are currently being spent on your community, and just to get some context for what the current priorities are, what's going on now that maybe you could support or enhance. And this information is available to the public and through the Department of Education website. And I'll send out something after this call with the instructions on how you would get to that, because it's not a direct link. It takes a few steps. But you can look at what the priorities have been, what the previous funding levels are, what the context is. Next, identify some short-term funding possibilities. And this is, again, a point folks keep bringing up. The federal language, I think, says that this money should supplement and not supplant what's going on now. And the idea is that it's kind of a one-shot deal, right? This whole pot of economic recovery money, I believe it's only 3 years. So there's a real desire not to start a program that can't last more than that time. So you might want to look at things like piloting a new model, some kind of professional development to build your capacity, startup costs in terms of materials or infrastructure to do your work. And that's getting yourself organized. Next, you want to look at how you can help your district and your school that you're working with improve educational outcomes for low-income students. So you're probably all familiar with the New Jersey School Report Card, but if you're not, know that you can go online, and again, I'll send out the link, but you can also Google it, and look up individual data for each school in your district. So if you're working, partnering with a school where math scores are an issue, you might look at ways in which your program could help boost math scores. If there are literacy scores are an issue, you might look at ways in which your program can create writing and reading opportunities. And what are you doing now that helps those schools meet those challenges? Again, that's goes back to Sue Martz's point about what are your strengths and how do you sell your program. If you have any evaluation data that shows that your program is helping kids, improving attendance, improving test scores, changing attitudes towards schools, use it to make your case. You can also use anecdotes about students who are thriving academically thanks to your program. And the most valuable data is the data from your program and from your own community. There's also a lot of national research that documents the impact of after school on student achievement. Some of it's available through the NJSAC website, www.njsac.org. A lot more is available through the After School Alliance website as well. And again, we'll send out these links. Next, you want to do some planning. Figure out how you could use the funds to support or improve your program in order to help the school. Again, the ideas should be sustainable. They should be one-time costs. And think about the partnerships that you have in place that can help make it a success. And we've talked about partnerships with schools. Also, look at the partnerships that you have in your community. For example, if you have strong relationships with a local environmental organization, you might be able to institute a hands-on science curriculum that supports what kids are doing in school and gives them a chance to work in the less structured after-school environment to enrich their learning in that area. Also, think about how you'll track the results. Are you going to look at grades, test scores, detention rates? You might get feedback from families or from classroom teachers. And then think about what makes you uniquely qualified to do this. You know, for any proposal, you need to be able to describe what's special and unique about your strengths and your abilities that make you suited to this and that mean you could do it as a success. So once you've thought about what you'd like to do, what you could do to partner with your school to help the kids in your community, look into anyone else who might be interested in this in your community as well, other after-school providers or other CBOs. Again, you don't want to create a position where we're competing against one another when we could be working together, and which would work better for the kids, better for the community, better for your organization. So look at ways that you could partner with them. Once you've thought things through, then it's when time to approach your school district. And you probably know who the best person is, whether it's the superintendent or your principal or the Title I coordinator. You want to start with the relationships you have in place because that always makes it easier to get in the door. And if at first you don't succeed, keep trying. We're all busy, and sometimes, you know, a phone call doesn't get returned on Monday, but the next week somebody has time to talk with you. So keep working on that and find your champion. If you don't have relationships and direct relationships in place, maybe this is a great opportunity to build them. And you may have other connections in your community, whether it's a parent who's very active in the PTO or another community organization who could help you start building those relationships. And then remember that your goal is to convince your district that after school makes sense as part of their funding request. So, again, there's national data that you can use. There's state data that highlights the need for more, the small number of children currently enrolled in after school in New Jersey compared to the number of children who could benefit from the services. And there's data that shows how many, that 85% of people in New Jersey do support after school and would like to see it more widely available. And then there's the local data, as I said, from the New Jersey School Report Card. Most importantly, when you start this conversation, it's not all about what you have to say. It's about listening really carefully because, again, your job is to help your school district achieve its goals and achieve the goals of the legislation, improving educational outcomes for children. By understanding, by really listening to what their priorities are, what's already in place, you can really think through and work with them as partners to figure out how you could help make that happen more easily and more cost-effectively, how you could work with them to maybe refine or retool your plan a bit to better meet their needs and the needs of the students, most importantly. Lastly, think about how you're going to show community support for your program. It's always wonderful if you can get your school folks, whether it's the Board of Education or the superintendent or the principal, to come visit your program for a day, see it in action, talk with the kids, talk with the parents. If that's not possible, you might need to find a way to bring the program to them, whether it's through a short video, photographs, or just bringing some parents to a school board meeting to tell their stories. So those are some of the tips that I have, and I'm sure there will be more. I'm looking at this call as the beginning of a process, not necessarily end, so we'll be looking to forward more information to you as it becomes available to us. Thanks. Back to you, Diane.
Great. Thanks, Amy. I have a question for the folks on the call. Do you want more specific information, and if you do you want it through the after-school flash? I'm assuming most of you are on the flash. That's how you receive this information. Or do you want it somehow posted on our website with links? If someone could give us, and what kind of information do you need? Nope. Okay. So I guess we're going to just keep moving forward. So does anybody else have any questions or comments or next steps or...
Diane, this is Sue Mark, the Department of Ed. I just wanted to make one last comment, and that is I think it's been mentioned, although I don't know if it was mentioned clearly enough for everyone to hear it, but the applications for the ARRA funds, for the stimulus funds under Title I and IDEA, are not available to the school districts yet. So this is a good time for people to begin to approach their districts to talk about some of the things that we've discussed today. because the districts will be in the process of planning but are not yet filling out their applications. The one thing I think that I'd like to also emphasize is that a good way to begin the whole conversation is to really find out what the school may need that the after-school program can provide. Because that really is, you know, if we go into these, you know, into the meetings saying just what we have to offer prior to listening to what their needs are, we might talk about some of the things that really aren't pertinent to them. So to really establish what the needs are and then to sort of show how you can support their work to address those needs. And I think, El Nardo, you made that very clear that that's where you found success in your program. So the applications aren't out yet, but once they go out, they will be due back probably by the end of August. So we're talking about like a 1 month, perhaps, if we're lucky, turnaround. So it's not too soon for people to begin approaching the districts that they serve, you know, the children of the schools that they serve, to begin to talk about these things.
And just to follow up on that, Sue, another tip to all of our providers is that every board, every district operates from goals and objectives. And we've just getting it together and putting out on our website the 09-10 goals and objectives for our districts. And so in having a conversation and in drafting your rationale and your needs, you might want to tie in to the current goals and objectives of the district as it relates to the various components of instruction, community relations, parents, you know, and et cetera, and then also tie into the local, to the program administrator and see what their direct needs are as well. So that the goals and objectives for every district are important in drafting your proposal.
And the connection there to the Title I and IDEA applications, I think more the Title I, because that's in a consolidated application for No Child Left Behind, and the districts have to prioritize their needs that then will be funded. So they have their district goals and objectives, as El Nardo said, but for their federal programs, they have to identify what their needs are, and then they have to prioritize those needs, and it's the priority needs that will be the ones that get funded through their Title I application. Or there are a fund.
Are there any more questions or comments? No? Okay. Did people like this kind of venue? We've never done this before. Was
it
beneficial?
I have enjoyed it. It's great.
Yeah.
Very good.
Thank you.
Well, I would really like to thank Dr. Webster and all of you, and also especially the Department of Education. I know you guys are very, very busy, and we all really appreciate it. And if folks will just keep posted on the flash, we'll have this recording posted, and then we'll also be feeding you a lot more information. So if there aren't any more questions,
Diane, can I just ask how will this be posted?
Yes.
How soon would this session be posted?
As soon as we can figure the technology out. I think it's actually available immediately via our conference call situation. We just have to figure out where we're going to do it and where we're going to actually post it on the website. So I'm hoping by early next week. Mm-hmm. And we'll send that out via the after-school flash so you'll know when to check on the website. We also might be able to do it as a direct link through the flash. I just have to figure that out. But I don't think it's going to be hard to do. I think we can do it. So,
Diane from the department,
I can respond. We couldn't get off mute quick enough before when you asked about the sharing information.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like the best way to
do the flash.
Everybody's attention.
Great. Sue, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that on behalf of the department, we appreciated the opportunity to get the word out because we do want to make sure that people have accurate information regarding the funding in New Jersey. Although the After School Alliance and the federal have lots of information, it's national. So I think it's important that people can understand the nuances that are going on within the state.
Mm-hmm.
So we thank you for the opportunity.
Great, and thank you. So everybody have a nice day, and look for the next flash, and we will get this information out to you as soon as we can.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
So did I.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Bye-bye.
Take care.